long pass to Pavel Bure. In the clear, right in. Yeah, it scores! Pavel Bure!
He will play. You know he'll play. He'll play on touches. He will play.
Burrow steals, cutting in, shoots, scores! They slayed the dragon! Now knocked down by high stick, the flush back to Bieksa, he shoots, he scores! Kevin Bieksa, the double overtime goal! And the Canucks will play for the Stanley Cup!
It's time for the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I just realized I forgot to press the one that had the voiceover in it. That's okay. This podcast is going off the rails already. Welcome to episode 43 of C4 on CHB, that is CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am one of your three co-hosts, Matt Lee at MattLee980, joined in studio by Chris Golden at Lightforce. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back after, you know, throwing me under the bus, driving over me, and then off the show.
Not only did we throw you under the bus, we ran you over, and then we honked twice and then backed up again.
You did. It felt so good. I appreciated the love.
I asked Clay this question last week. What do you think of the new podcast intro?
You know, contrary to Clay's popular belief, I like it. And no, I don't have any issue not being involved in it. It sounds a whole lot better without me.
But you know what? I had friends saying they miss your sweet and sultry voice at the start of every podcast.
Was this Johnny from Tokyo, perhaps?
No, it was not Johnny from Tokyo, because Johnny from Tokyo likes the new podcast intro, actually.
Oh, okay. It's amazing that Johnny from Tokyo.
I think it was someone named Marnie or something. Or
My wife would totally miss my voice.
Yeah, well. To each her own, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Joining us via phone is not Clay Emo at Canuck Clay. Clay is off getting in shape and basking in all of his Seattle Seahawks glory. But joining us from his luxurious home in Surrey, BC, is the blogfather JJ Grow, the guy behind at Canucks Hockey, by the way, joining us on the line. JJ, welcome aboard.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, well, you know, we're digging down deep into the barrel when we're calling you up, that's for sure.
Well, I figure I'm probably like number 10, number 20 on the depth chart.
Don't give yourself that much credit.
I figure you didn't find anyone in Utica or Kalamazoo, and, you know, you just decided to call me in Surrey instead.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's nice to have Joakim Eriksson called up to the big leagues once in a while.
Well, you know, the good thing here is I think I only have Troy from White Rock as kind of my baseline, right?
So JJ from Surrey, we will take over Troy from White Rock any day.
As long as that's the standard you judge me by, you know, then we're okay.
All right, well, we know JJ's got a lot of things to say, whether it be about Zach Kassian or the alleged rumors involving Jacob Markstrom. Got a lot to come up to talk about today on the show. We're going to get into Tuesday's dismantling at the hands of the Anaheim Ducks. We'll discuss that rumor which came out yesterday surrounding a possible Zach Kassian for Matt Barkowski swap in Boston. We'll also get into the scuttlebutt about Jacob Markstrom getting pulled off that trade block and what it means for Eddie Lack going forward. So a lot of things to talk about coming up right here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. So Chris.
Yo.
Did you happen to watch Tuesday's game against the Anaheim Ducks?
Totally. I had it on the TV.
JJ?
Of course I had it on.
Yeah, I believe JJ's exact comments before we hit the record button were, well, I had it on in the background.
That's watching it, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I was going back.
I feel like now
the Mindy Project.
People used to act, Mindy Project, that's getting cut right out of the podcast.
that's your lead right there.
That is, like, remember back in 2011 when people actually watched the games and stuff? And now it's funny that when you talk to people, they're like, oh, yeah, well, I had it on in the background. People just sort of have it on so that there's some noise filtering into their homes these days.
Well, it wasn't the most exciting of games.
Understatement of the year.
Yeah, I mean,
you mean 17 shots on Frederik Andersen is not exciting?
Well, didn't they have three in the last, like, half of the game?
Oh, I wrote it down here. They had 10 in the first period and then 7 in the last 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
If that doesn't put butts in seats, I don't know what will.
Yeah, that's quite a dry spell. I mean, you're not going to score if you're not going to get shots through.
You know, it's funny because I remember after that Calgary loss, the one where they got shut out 1-0 from Yanni Ortio, Henrik said after the game, well, at least we were getting pucks on net, so he didn't really look at it as a game that they deserved to lose. So what's the excuse here for Henrik Sedin and the Canucks when they only put on 17 shots on net?
Well, I mean, I think Henrik pretty much admitted at the end of the game that they stunk. I can't remember what his exact words were, but
something along those lines.
What he said, right?
Yeah.
I mean, is Anaheim just that good of a team, Chris?
Well, Anaheim's a good team, but when
you get 17 shots,
yeah, and those 17 shots, you point one out to me that actually had a chance.
I watched that whole game. I can't off the top of my head think of one legitimate scoring chance. Maybe that Sean Mathias one on the shorthanded situation.
Okay, so which is interesting. I mean, the Canucks, I think, are second in the league with their penalty kill, and they generate their most offense shorthanded. That says a lot. It stunk. I know I've turned into Mr. Glass Full Empty, but
yeah.
why would I be encouraged to watch a game? And you're right. I remember 2011, and maybe I'm still, you know, participating in this hangover, but it was boring. I want to be watching the Mindy Project, and I don't even watch that show.
Only JJ watches the Mindy Project at this blog, okay?
It's a good show, you guys.
We're not going to talk about the Mindy Project anymore, guys. You know, Willie Desjardins post-game, I thought his comments after the game were very intriguing. He says, "I think we can compete with them being the Ducks. I do. Whenever we play them, I honestly believe inside we can compete and play well. We haven't. Maybe somewhere along the line, I have to change my mind." So, JJ, what are you sort of interpreting from those comments?
Well, you know, I remember the first couple of games against the Ducks, or maybe the first game against the Ducks this year. And, the Canucks did compete, because didn't they lose in, like, overtime?
I want to say they won in a shootout with Eddie Lack and Ned, didn't they?
Something like that. I mean, they did keep it competitive at the start of the year. And there's a difference here. You know, like, you know, if the Canucks could have competed against the Ducks on Tuesday, that would have been okay. You know, I think a lot of people would have been happy if, you know, it seemed like, you know, they had a shot, you know, at, you know, staying along with the Ducks and all that stuff. But they really didn't, you know, and I know I tweeted at the end of the game that, yeah, you know, if there's a, you know, silver lining in this, it's, you know, this is a measuring stick game. And it just kind of goes to show you how far the Canucks have to go to be in the same class as Anaheim or teams like Anaheim.
Chris, I felt like you had something to say just before he did.
No, I have nothing to say. I'm speechless. That game has taken the words straight out of my mouth and thrown them in the crapper.
Here's the other thing you have to start asking yourself. Let's say the Canucks snag that last playoff spot in the West, and then let's say that they're matched up against the Anaheim Ducks in the first round. Can anyone honestly say it's worth it to play against the Anaheim Ducks in the first round?
Well,
just based purely off of this game.
Well, purely off this game, I mean, you know, everyone's going to predict that it's going to be a three-game sweep.
Yeah.
You know,
3 games plus the white flag at the end.
That's pretty much it. But, you know, I mean, there's always going to be people, you know, there's going to be optimistic, you know, like Clay's always optimistic, and there's always, you know, sunshines and rainbows in his Canucks world and all that stuff. And, you know, I mean, you make the playoffs, anything can happen. You know, and ultimately, I think that's what the Canucks want to do, is squeak into that playoff spot and hope for the best. Now, realistically, like I wouldn't put money on them right now. Not the way they're playing right now anyway. I mean, a lot of things can happen, you know, between now and, you know, the first week of April, right? But yeah, it doesn't look good.
Well, let's use a comparable for a Vancouver Canucks team that squeaked into the playoffs. That was 1994. And I can't tell you that 94 team looked as piss poor as this team does. This squad has, like, it started off so well. I have no clue where that magic went, or if it was just the fact that the Vancouver Canucks were surprising everyone and then got into some bad habits. You could say it's coaching, but then we saw this happen with Tortorella last year. So is it truly Tortorella that caused the swoon, or is it the fact that we have the same personnel that somehow have forgotten how to play in the second half of the season? But if I look at that 94 team, at least the 94 team, you know, was playing sort of devil may care. They didn't win as maybe many games as they probably should have, but they were generating chances and opportunities. They gave Calgary a run for their money in a series that no one expected Vancouver to win, and suddenly you got that one round, and then they had nothing to lose. I don't see, if Vancouver plays Anaheim in the first round or whoever it is, that there's any sign that this team is going to get to that level. Although you said it right, maybe things change. Maybe there's some magical trade that happens, and that lights a fire, and the Canucks go on a run and are trending upwards into the playoffs. But at this point, I just tank. Let's go for McDavid.
Yeah.
So suddenly we trade for Cliff Ronning and Sergio Meso and all of them, right?
Yeah, maybe that needs to happen. In today's NHL, that'll never happen.
You know, and also if, you know, Clay were here, he'd probably bring up the fact that, again, the Canucks did not have Brad Richardson. They didn't have Derek Dorsett for the last half of that game. They didn't already have Kevin Bieksa in their lineup as well. So those are two or three pretty big holes in your lineup already. So do they make up a 4-goal differential? Probably not, but...
Well, no, because look at it this way. The names that you listed there, Matt, like, you're talking about maybe the number four defenseman, talking about the fourth line center or fourth line winger, and you're talking about maybe the third line or fourth line center. You know, I mean...
You mean winger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, you're talking about the, you know, three guys.
Talking about spare parts mostly.
Pretty much. And if your season depends on those guys, and there's no doubt that, you know, good teams with good depth. I mean, you know, the bottom lines are going to contribute, right? But I mean, if your whole season revolves around these guys, I mean, what we should be looking at is, you know, where's Bonino? Where's Burrows? You know, where's Higgins, who's playing in the top six? Probably shouldn't be playing in the top six. I mean, those are the guys that you should be looking at.
Yeah, I mean, the other sad reality is that on some nights you could say Derek Dorsett looks to be the most impressive Canuck out there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and that's a compliment to Derek Dorsett. But, you know, it's scary to think that he's that big of a key piece to the Canuck success.
Let's talk about the Kessler headshot on Derek Dorsett that saw him leave the rest of the game. JJ, let's go to you for the first take. Should there have at least been a penalty on Ryan Kessler?
You know, my initial thought was no. I mean, it could have been a penalty. Talking supplementary discipline or anything like stuff like that. I don't think it is. You know, I mean, Dorsett had his head down. I know that the league looks at these things differently now. I mean, I kind of look at it as, you know, keep your head up, right? Like, that's what you're always taught as a kid. I know the mindset's changed with everything everyone's learned about concussions and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I think the first thing the NHL looks at now is, well, did Kessler intend to hit him in the head? You know, and at first glance, I don't think he did.
Sorry, JJ, Chris has this, like, really pissed off look in his face right now.
Well,
what do you think, Chris?
Well, I'm not saying it was worth a suspension, because I have absolutely no clue, because there is absolutely no standard by this league as to what's clearly a suspendable offense or not. In my mind, that's an old school Scott Stevens special. Dorsett had his head down, Kessler was going laterally across the ice, and yeah, Kessler caught him with his head down. If I look at pre-concussion era, that's a clean hockey hit. You don't skate with your head down. But in the current NHL, we're told that you, whether you have your head down or not, will be protected. You cannot make principal point of contact to be the head, which, if you want to argue, oh, he hit his knee first, then why isn't it knee on knee? I will cut the referee some slack. It's a fast game when that all happens. But how many angles do we have to look at where we actually see Kessler knock him in the head? I'm not looking for Kessler to be suspended forever, but the point being is there should be some form of penalty. Heck, fine him $5,000 for all I care to say that's not allowed. Just be consistent. And in my mind, it's like the NHL Wheel of Justice. They spin it on a board, and whatever it comes up with, they then roll some dice and decide to add a number to it. It's complete and utter BS.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the reality of how this league operates. And, you know, I agree with you at that point. There's absolutely no standard. It's you're spinning the whole wheel of justice. I mean, it hasn't changed, right? I mean, my opinion just comes from, you know, looking at it. I don't think Kessler intended to hit him. And the other thing is, I don't think Kessler had time to kind of pull up from that hit.
Well,
you know, because, I mean, Dorsett had his head down.
No.
You know, he put his head down. So
that's where, to me, though, we've seen, I think, lesser hits result in some form of penalty being called.
Oh, absolutely.
Suspension.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely correct on that.
I'm just going to sit on the fence of both of your arguments. I agree that there is no standard. I also don't think that there was any intent from Kessler to actually hit Dorsett, or let alone have the result that it did. That said, I do find it funny that I think there are a few Canucks fans out there who thought it was a penalty just because of the guy who made the hit, Ryan Kessler. I mean, he obviously got a lot of boos when fans saw that replay.
Right. And, you know, if there's one hit that I actually thought the league would look at, it was that Cassian hit.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it was in the numbers after the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to that hit in a bit, though.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, Henrik Sedin said, I thought it was going to be a five-minute major from his vantage point on the bench. Sean Mathias on the non-call says, this seems to happen every year. So, obviously the Vancouver Canucks thought it was a penalty. Ryan Kessler didn't think it was a penalty. The referees didn't think it was a penalty. And evidently the NHL offices did not think it was a penalty either. So, fans can gripe about it what they will. But either way, no justice has been handed down. Vancouver Canucks dropping a 4-0 decision to the Anaheim Ducks. And everyone is once again half empty on their chances of making the playoffs.
In case some of you wonder who the best is.
This guy's an incompetent fool.
The best of the best of the best, sir.
This guy is an absolute media junkie.
The best of the best of the best, sir. Yeah, with honors.
Don't push me here.
But we just sucked.
Oh no! We suck again!
I rediscovered just how awesomely awesome my life is.
If this isn't rock bottom, I don't know what is.
So, boys, did Zach Cassian look bad? There is one correct answer, Matt.
I have it written down in my notes. I have, did Zach Cassian look bad? Yes, in bold.
Do you agree with that, Mr. J.J. Guerrero?
Yeah, he didn't look good.
And see, you've been a supporter. You've been taking shots at us here at C4 over me, and I'll own it. I'm the one who's not riding the Zach Cassian train. But at what point in time
you're riding the Zach Cassian train, all right?
Yeah, I'm riding the train right
to YVR.
that's exactly. I'll pay for his transit fare.
Can't even drive him.
I don't have a car.
He doesn't deserve to be driven. No. Apparently,
and cabs are way too expensive. You've been taking shots at us, but tell me. What evidence have you seen that there is going to be development? In fact, it almost occurs to me that we're now seeing regression.
Well, here's the thing with Cassian. He's definitely got the tools. He's got the size. He's got the skill set. He's got the speed. He's got some really good hands, and it's enticing. And he's still a young guy. I mean, how old is he? Like 23, 24, or whatever, right? You know, there's a lot of untapped potential there. I think the question the Canucks have to answer here is, do they think he's going to reach that potential? And if they think he is, what's the best way to get him there? Is it tough love like what they're doing now? Or is it, you know, let's throw him in the second line, sink or swim?
Well, so I'm gonna use this reference of tools that you had used and give you an analogy. Zach Cassian wants to be an architect. The problem is he has all the tools to be a plumber and has absolutely no desire to go and plumb for a living.
Well, no, and that I'm sure that plays a part of it. But we don't know that. I mean, we're not in the room. I mean, we hear kind of rumors of, you know, maybe off ice activities and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I don't know how much of a legitimate opportunity he's actually getting right now.
Okay, so is that what's missing? Is the legitimate opportunity, which maybe arguably you could say Tortorella provided him at the end of last season, the reward? Okay, let's give that to him. Let's put him wherever he needs to go. But I'm more concerned when you hear players like Brad Richardson who say, hey, I'm not saying anything, but this is what I needed to be when I was a player growing up, and you needed to know how to learn to be a pro. That's saying something without saying something. And if we don't know what's going on in the room, it's interesting that a pro is coming out and talking specifically about a player.
Oh, of course. And you know, and any player with a reputation, I mean, you're going to hear about things like that, right? I mean, we know about Tyler Seguin, and, you know, we see what he's doing in Dallas right now. I mean, yeah, Benning traded him, or Chiarelli and Benning traded him from Boston because they didn't like the stuff he was doing, you know, off ice and all that stuff. You know, he's one of the leading scorers in the NHL with Dallas. Richards and Carter, you know, leaving Philadelphia for, you know, same reasons. Stanley Cup winners. Mm. So you're right. It's up to the player. The player's got to want to do it too. The player's got to be responsible, you know. But I think the team as well has to give him a legitimate opportunity. If they think he's going to be a top six player, they think he's going to be a top six power forward, they got to give him that opportunity. They can't expect him to produce like a top six power forward when he's playing on the third, fourth line and not getting any power play time.
Well, I mean, did he? I don't feel that he didn't get an opportunity last night. I mean, he skated the majority of the night with, you know, Nick Bonino and Sean Mathias. It's at least an improvement over where he's usually been playing the last 10 or 12 games.
Mm-hmm. And I think he was, you know, like, he was inconsistent, right? I mean, and maybe that's what it is. I mean, you know, maybe that's what Cassian needs to show him. It's like, okay, give me a couple of games at this. I'll show you what I can do.
I mean, it's hard not to point out his biggest blunder of the night on Tuesday, which was that penalty he took hitting Patrick Maroon from behind when clearly the whistle had gone. And not only was it a bad penalty, it's a penalty that allowed the Ducks to score that nail in the coffin fourth goal.
Well, yeah, and that was a stupid and selfish penalty.
So if you're Willie Desjardins and you see Cassian playing on a line with Bonino and Mathias, and then he takes a penalty like that, aren't you just sort of driven up the wall if you're Desjardins?
Oh, probably.
So are you inclined to continue giving him minutes like that when you see him do things like that?
Well, is it something that he's going to continue doing? Right, I mean, it's one thing when he's, you know, if he's going to be part of that second line and he does something like that, something stupid and selfish like that, you know, Desjardins pulls him aside and say, hey, you can't do it. Put him out there the next game, see what happens. Right, I mean, you can't have a young player go in there and be afraid to make mistakes and all that sort of stuff. You know, you got to give him an opportunity to bounce back, learn from their mistakes. And, you know, fair point, if he doesn't learn from his mate, maybe it's best that, you know, they move on from this whole Cassian thing.
So I'm going to draw a parallel with a player like Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat, who is considerably younger, who's looking to prove himself, and he's inconsistent. He's got good games and bad games. You can see development, even if it's slow. He seems to be a kid who's actually learning how to play the game. And you got Cassian, who doesn't seem game in and game out to understand his role. Now, is that confusion being directed to him by the coach or by the general manager? Maybe. Maybe they're asking him to play one style and he's having difficulty understanding what that style is. I'll accept that. But you look at Seguin, he needed a change in environment. And maybe that's what Cassian needs. I'm not saying he's a bad player. He's got all the tools. But at some point in time, you have to sink or swim.
Well, exactly. And that's what I said. I mean, you got to give him a chance here.
So you're saying he hasn't got a chance though.
One game playing with Bonino and Mathias. I mean, is that a legitimate chance?
So then, okay.
Is that enough to kind of form an opinion on whether or not he's going to fulfill that potential of being a top six power forward?
I'll play ball with you here. So, what would be a legitimate chance?
Well, I would think, you know, you give him a few games at a time. Three, four games in a row or something like that.
So do you think he deserves the rest of this homestand on a line with Bonino and Mathias to sort of sink or swim?
Well, who are you going to put up there? No one else is producing.
Well, and that's sort of the problem, though, is that if you're going to consistently give him an opportunity when nothing else is working, ultimately we're accepting that, okay, we're willing to allow this not to work. And I think for me, if the team were to go and say at this point, hey, guys, if we make it in, we make it in. If not, we don't. We're going to go and work on the future. We're going to develop our players. We're going to go and give everyone a look at where they need to be and whether they fit into this future or not. Hey, you know what? Do whatever the heck you want with Cassian. Put him on the first line with the Sedins for all I care. But if the team wants to go and say, we're looking to make the playoffs, Cassian hasn't done enough to deserve to be on the ice when the lineup is healthy. So how do we go and sacrifice that goal of making the playoffs, which, again, I think I've made it very clear over the last few episodes, I'm not entirely buying into anymore, if ultimately it's just to give the guy a shot?
Well, and maybe actually that's where ultimately that decision has to be made. You know, I mean, personally, I think this is kind of a a transitional year for this team here. I mean, they've been open about wanting to work in the young guys, to develop the young guys. You know, the core's getting old. Sedin's are, they're mid-30s. Verbata's, mid-30s. Ham used to be, I mean, the old core. Even Ryan Miller, 34 years old or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced that this is a team that's going to make some noise in the playoffs anyway. And you might as well take this year to see what they've got. What does Vey actually provide? What does Cassian actually provide? Corrado, Horvat. I mean, we're seeing bits and pieces of these guys, and you've got guys like Corrado's playing the role they want him to play. You know, and they've got him in a, they probably got him where they want to play. Horvat, they've got, they're playing him where to suit the role that they see him playing long term. You know, and Cassian, why not? If they see, like I said, if they see Cassian as a top six power forward in the future, well, then give him that opportunity.
Well, speaking of seeing what the Canucks have got, two Boston scouts were seeing what the Canucks have got in Zach Cassian. I'm just curious, JJ, to get your thoughts on, these alleged Matt Barkowski return rumors for Zach Cassian. This is a guy who's a pending unrestricted free agent. He doesn't make very much money, a left-handed defenseman, so he's certainly not going to provide any offense. He's got 100-plus games under his belt, but zero goals to his name. Is this a fair return at all for a guy like Zach Cassian, who obviously his stock is at an all-time low?
Well, I don't know if that's fair. I mean, well, you guys know my thoughts on Cassian. I'm not sure. I still see value in that potential. Whether or not he's close to fulfilling it or whatever, I still see value in that. And with Bartkowski, the guy's, Bartkowski's at that age, or maybe he starts blossoming as a defenseman. But, do we really need another third-pairing defenseman?
Sure we do. We're going to get all the offense from it.
we're talking about, offense drying up and all that sort of stuff. And, we're getting a guy here. And, not only a guy that's not going to provide any offense, a guy that could leave after the year. So what's the point? I mean, if there's a Cassian or there's a deal that's revolving around Cassian Bartkowski, I would think that there's got to be other pieces involved.
Like a prospect of some sort?
Well, yeah. I really don't know. I don't know what is Louis Erickson. I mean, I know that the Bruins are. And I'm just throwing that out there because I know the Bruins are cash strapped. We know the cap's not going up, or if it does, it's going to go up, by a very minimal amount. Thank you, Canadian Looney. And the Bruins have to dump some salary. They've got some guys that they need to resign. Riley Smith and RFA, and Dougie Hamilton's an RFA. They've got to clear some room for that. So maybe there's another piece that's coming back. I don't know.
You sound like you're sort of speculating at what could possibly come back. So do you have an idea of what kind of salary would come back for the Canucks then?
It's got to be significant salary coming back, right? Because otherwise the Bruins just don't do it.
Just hypothetically, would you take Brad Marchand?
No.
Oh, gosh, no.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, no.
You would sooner have Louis Eriksson at his current price tag than a Brad Marchand or a Milan Lucic.
Well, for Brad Marchand at $4.5 million versus Louis Eriksson for $4.5 million.
Oh, they made the same?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's easy then.
I know Marchand's a little bit younger or whatever, but he's also a bigger dick, right? So, I don't know. I'm not to say that. Are we still PG-13?
Not anymore.
Now I gotta bleep things out and stuff.
Oh, sorry, guys.
So you wouldn't make this trade, Bartkowski for Cassian, straight up?
Not straight up, no.
So if they sweeten the deal with, say, a prospect, a Ryan Spooner or an Alexander Kokhlechev, would you be more inclined to do it?
Oh, probably, yeah. I mean, the Canucks want to get younger here. Actually, with this particular deal, they get older. Bartkowski a couple years older than Cassian, right?
Yeah.
So, I know different position and all that sort of stuff, but...
The other thing that was suggested yesterday, Pierre LeBrun of ESPN/TSN suggesting Jacob Markstrom no longer on the trade block. Evidently, does that mean the writing is on the wall for Eddie Lack? Or does it mean nothing?
Are you me or Chris?
Whoever. Which one of you is going to step up to the plate and bat this one out?
I would think so. I think if the Canucks have made a decision to keep Markstrom, then you have to think that Elulak's going to be given an opportunity to be a starting goalie somewhere else.
Is he ready to be a starting goaltender somewhere else?
Well, he's ready for more than, you know, the number of games he's getting now.
No, I don't disagree. I just don't know if a team looks to trade for him to be a starting goaltender unless, you know, that team is in a complete rebuild. What, Eddie's got one more year before he's a free agent?
Yeah, I think he's got next year. Next year is the last year of his current contract, so he's a UFA after that.
Yeah, I'm all for trading him. I mean, I think if you look at the goaltenders, I mean, Markstrom would probably fetch a decent return, but Elulak seems to be the one that would get the most. And from a business perspective, you trade the one that gets most value. But next, you know, there's no way Markstrom goes through waivers one more time.
No, not the way he's playing.
There's no re-entry waivers, though, correct?
No, there's no
re-entry waivers anymore with the new CBA.
Right, but if nothing happens, he comes up, he's not going back down. If there was an injury or something along those lines.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing, Elulak, I mean, he would fill the needs of some of the teams that are out there. I mean, Minnesota's looking for a goalie. They're going through some, you know, they've got some injury woes there. I mean, Edmonton, right? I mean, you can argue even Toronto might need a goalie upgrade. So, I mean, there's teams out there that I think Elulak would fill a need out there.
I think, you know, I see your argument about Elulak sort of pushing to be a starter at one of those teams. I think there is a case to be made for it. I think it's just sort of tough for the Canucks to even suggest that they trade Lack to a guy like a team like Minnesota, who the Canucks are obviously in a dogfight with to make the playoffs, and then there's Edmonton, who's a division rival. So I can't see the Canucks moving Lack to a team like that. I look at Eddie Lack as more of an insurance policy for teams who are in that playoff equation that are looking for some more depth and goal. I mean, you know, Detroit is up there in their division right now, but they've got Jimmy Howard, who's had some injury problems this season. I don't think that they feel confident if Howard went down going to, say, Thomas McCollum or Peter Mrazek.
I'm just curious. You're saying that Edmonton's a division rival. Do you think the Vancouver Canucks really look at the Edmonton Oilers as being, oh, we better not go and help them out with a goaltender because they're going to turn the corner?
Hey, you never know.
Like, I get the Minnesota Wild comparison, but if we're not going to trade within the division, and the day that, you know, the today's division is the West, you've just eliminated a bunch of teams, and now we're looking at the East. And so, sure, there might be a Detroit there, or maybe a Toronto, or whomever that might want an Elulak, but...
So I'll pose this question to JJ then. So if the Canucks entertained the idea of trading Elulak to Edmonton, what would you want back in return? Would it be more substantial than what you would ask from, say, a Columbus or a Detroit?
At this point, I don't think it really matters. You know, I know they kind of tried to play that game with Schneider, and, you know, the return had to be that much higher with Schneider going to a divisional rival and all that sort of stuff. I think the Canucks have to look at this from an asset management point of view. They don't want to run into the same problem where they're stuck with a couple of goalies and they can't move one and they end up losing both and, you know, like all that other stuff. So,
and soon to be all three?
Well, exactly. That's the funny part about it. I think if he was going to go to, say, the Oilers, the Canucks would probably be looking at draft picks anyway. You know, like, I'm not sure if there's any... I mean, the Oilers might have a couple of prospects that they'd be interested in, but I don't know. I mean, just the way that organization is going, I'm not sure I can trust sort of what players they have in the system right now.
All right, JJ, we'll leave it at that for this one. Thanks so much for joining us on this part of the podcast.
Oh, hey, no problem, you guys.
We'll be right back with Ask CHB and the Haiku after this break.
It's time for Ask CHB.
So here we are at Ask CHB, my favorite segment of all time on every episode, where our thousands and thousands of listeners interact with us. I do want to give a shout out to a gentleman who sent us an email. We're going to get you on to the next episode, what we call our Sunday Super Show. Sunday Super Show. Well, we'll get you out there then, but we are going to go and change the format up. There are some big things happening with Ask CHB because, again, we want you, our listeners, involved on this podcast. Less Matt, less Chris, less Clay, so much less Clay, more you. But we did ask JJ, the blog father, a question earlier, and it really revolved around that hit, that Kessler collision with Derek Dorsett, and whether or not it was suspension-worthy. Now, as you heard from JJ, JJ says no. I lose my mind over that response because I see the lack of consistency, and Matt is sitting in the room, sitting on a fence, not wanting to choose a side whatsoever. But we did get a very passionate response from one of our thousands of listeners, and that is Ryan M., who is at In the 250. He says, worthy of two games, repeat offender, though, so far. I didn't realize Kessler's a repeat offender.
Yeah, I think he was definitely fined before, I want to say. I can't remember if he was suspended, though.
And I don't remember suspension either, and that's sort of what caught my eye, is a repeat offender. But, you know, let's get you off the fence here.
I like Ryan's big hand of justice, though.
Yeah?
It is funny.
I'm curious, though, and we're going to get you off the fence. Is that hit worth a suspension?
No.
Why not?
Because Dorsett just is sort of like admiring the pass or looking at the play, and I don't think he sees Kessler coming down in his blind side. Is he in a vulnerable position that Kessler should let up? Yes, but I also think, like JJ said, Kessler doesn't really have much time to sort of let up either because they're both sort of coming at each other. I think Kessler said after the game that it was more Dorsett running into him.
No, and I'm not going to go and say Kessler went to hit Dorsett and hurt him. To me, he's got an opportunity to create a collision that frees up the puck. You take that. The problem is that you have a player in a vulnerable position. And in my understanding, and again, who the heck am I? I'm just a guy on a podcast and write occasionally on a blog. But my understanding is the NHL is saying that we're going to protect those players in a vulnerable position. We're going to get rid of the Scott Stevens specials. Scott Stevens made a career out of annihilating people who had their head down. Heck, look at Eric Lindros. No longer plays in the NHL and probably lost half of his career because of Scott Stevens specials.
Yeah.
At what point is the NHL going to go and say, no, we're going to draw the line and here's what we're going to do. Now, is this the play that you start on? No, I think they need to consistently figure out what exactly constitutes a hit to the head. I would have been okay if it was a penalty called during the game with no supplementary discipline.
Blurred lines, my friend.
Blurred lines, indeed. Well, as we mentioned with Ask CHB, we are going to go and change the format. You're going to hear more in a future episode, but I think now it's time to do a clayless CHB haiku.
Garth, that was a haiku.
So here we are, Matt, where we need to channel the power of the what?
Of the 575.
That's right, you got to channel the power of the 575, where you send us your best, your most magnificent Canucks-themed haiku. We're going to talk a little bit about the previous episode, because I believe there was a contest that was run without me, about me. But unlike Clay, who goes and asks, hey guys, we're recording a podcast, why don't you submit those haiku? We've learned our lesson, Matt, where when we ask, people actually say, no, I only answer to Clay. So we're actually going to go and take a few of these post-Canucks game haiku that were sent to him after that 4-0 loss to the Anaheim Ducks. So there's this one from at 04F, or P-H-U-X-A-C-H-E, who I, again, just like Clay, cannot say to keep this a Disney-themed podcast. This one's a stinker. Miller should have had all those. Lack for Buffalo? What are your thoughts?
Lack for Buffalo?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too sure if he's sending lack to Buffalo. I don't know. Maybe he means back to Buffalo.
Oh,
but he's
yeah.
Saying lack.
I think he means back to Buffalo.
Hmm.
I'll agree on the first goal, the one that sort of went off his glove and in. That was bad. It was a bad goal to give up.
Okay. We have another one from at X, KIMLNOX, and that is can't score any goals, but no too many men calls. Hashtag moral victory.
Hashtag small victories.
There's at Jerry Maple. Shutout for 8 frames. This is past ridiculous. Rogers too friendly.
Yeah, we didn't talk that much about it on the show, but yeah, the Canucks have been shut out in the last 8 periods of hockey at home.
And it's surprising because they are a far better road team this season. And that was where in, you know, past seasons where the Canucks haven't played well, it's the road that's done them in. And I'm going to share a last one here from at PetBugs13. Wow, that really sucked. Still have my ticket receipt. Can I get a refund?
I think there's about 18,000 plus who would like a refund on that game.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. PetBugs, but all sales are final. Well, I think that wraps up our stellar episode where we got J.J. Guerrero, the blog father, on in Clay's absence. As Clay is going and getting his Super Bowl swag on, or I guess we're assuming that that's the case because apparently he's being made famous in Seattle. Matt, any final words that you have to share with the thousands and thousands of listeners of C4?
Well, I mean, it's like we mentioned last week's edition of the podcast that this road or this homestand is definitely going to tell us a lot about whether or not the Canucks are going to be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline. If the first game is of any indication, you're not encouraged by the results. So I think that while they have the Buffalo Sabres roll into town on Friday, the Canucks definitely have some tough sledding ahead of them at the rest of this homestand.
Yeah, I'm wanting the Vancouver Canucks to prove me wrong. I want to see them prove to me that I have absolutely no clue on what a good hockey team looks like and that they're just in a funk that they're going to break. I had someone tell me that I'm typical of your Vancouver Canucks bandwagon fan, and I'm kind of intrigued by that, you know, here I am being called a bandwagon fan, even though I've been cheering and hating on this team forever. Next year, even if they sucked and got Connor McDavid, I would cheer for them again. I simply want to see a team that has some encouraging signs that they actually understand how to play the game of hockey. I just want to be entertained. Can we not be entertained?
We can always be entertained.
So, some music, some tunage. I like it. In fact, that's kind of entertaining.
That's me trying to tell you that we need to get out.
Okay. Well, I guess with that, if you're looking for us, you can find us at facebook.com/CanucksHockeyBlog or facebook.com/C4Podcast. We're at Canucks Hockey on Twitter, myself at Lightforce Chris Golden, Matt, who's at MattLee980, and Clay, who's not here, is at Canuck Clay. Go to CanucksHockeyBlog.com and visit us everywhere we happen to be. With all of that, we're out. She's a carpenter with a book of poems, got another side.